It was William's birthday, but in spite of that, his spirit was gloomy and overcast. For one thing, he hadn't got Jumble, his beloved mongrel, and a birthday without Jumble was, in William's eyes, a hollow mockery of a birthday. Jumble had hurt his foot in a rabbit trap and had been treated for it at home till William's well-meaning but mistaken ministrations had caused the vet to advise Jumble's removal to his own establishment. William had indignantly protested, but his family was adamant. And when the question of his birthday celebration was broached, feeling was still high on both sides. "I'd like a dog for my birthday present," said William. "You've got a dog," said his mother. "I shan't have when you and that man have killed it between you," said William. "I've seen him sticking his fingers down their throats, fit to choke 'em, giving 'em pills and things. Anyway, I want a dog for my birthday present. I'm sick of not having a dog. I've not had a dog for nearly 3 days now." "Well, even if he doesn't kill Jumble, I want another dog. I want two more dogs," he added shamelessly. "Nonsense. Of course you can't have another dog." "I said two more dogs." "Well, you can't have two more dogs." "Well, anyway, I needn't go to the dancing class on my birthday." "Of course he must go to the dancing class," said Mrs. Brown. "It was only an hour, and it was a most expensive course." To William, it seemed the worst that could possibly happen to him. But it wasn't. When he heard that his sister Ethel's admirer, Mr. Dewar, was coming to tea on his birthday, his indignation rose to boiling point. "But it's my birthday! I don't want him here on my birthday!" William had a more deeply rooted objection to Mr. Dewar than to any of his sister's other admirers. Mr. Dewar had an offhand, facetious manner, which William had disliked from his first meeting with him. William awoke on the morning of his birthday still in a mood of unmelting resentment. A dancing class. And that man to tea on his birthday. He went downstairs morosely to receive his presents. His mother's present to him was a dozen new handkerchiefs with his initials upon each. His father's a new leather pencil case. William thanked them with a manner of cynical aloofness of which he was rather proud. "Now, William," said his mother anxiously at lunch, "you'll go to the dancing class nicely this afternoon, won't you?"
"I'll go the way I generally go to things. I don't know whether it's nice or not."
This brilliant repartee cheered him considerably. But still, no Jumble. A dancing class. That man to tea. Gloom closed over him again. Mrs. Brown was still looking at him anxiously. When she saw him in his hat and coat after lunch, she said again, "William, you are going to the dancing class, aren't you?" William walked past her with a short laugh that was wild and reckless and bitter and sardonic. It was, in short, a very good laugh, and he was proud of it. He swaggered down the drive and ostentatiously turned off in the opposite direction to the dancing class. He walked on slowly for some time, and then turned and retraced his steps in the direction of the dancing class with furtive swiftness. To do so, he had to pass the gate of his home, but he meant to do this in the ditch, so that his mother, who might still be anxiously watching the road for the reassuring sight of his return, should be denied the satisfaction of it. He could not resist, however, peeping cautiously out of the ditch to see if she were watching for him. There was no sign of her. There was something else that made William rise to his feet, his eyes and mouth wide open. There, tied to a tree in the drive near the front door, were two young collies, little more than pups. Two dogs. He'd asked his family for two dogs, and here they were. Two dogs. His heart swelled with gratitude and affection for his family. Oh, how terribly he'd misjudged them, thinking they didn't care two pins about his birthday, and here they'd got him the two dogs he'd asked for, as a surprise, just put them there for him to find. His heart still swelling with love and gratitude, he went up the drive. As he went, the church clock struck the hour. He'd only just be in time for the dancing class now, even if he ran all the way. His mother had wanted him to be in time for the dancing class, and the sight of the two dogs had touched his heart so deeply that he wanted to do something in return to please his mother. He'd hurry off at once and wait till he came back to thank them for the dogs. He stooped down, undid the two leads from the tree, and ran off again down the drive. The two dogs leapt and gambolled joyfully about him as he ran, evidently recognizing him as their new owner. The smaller collie began to direct his energies to burrowing in the ditches, and the larger one to squeezing through the hedge, where he found himself, to his surprise, in a field of sheep. He didn't know they were sheep. It was his first day in the country. He'd only that morning left a London shop. But dim instincts began to stir in him. William saw him round up the sheep in the field and begin to drive them pell-mell through the hedge into the road, then chivy the whole jostling, perturbed flock of them down the road towards William's house. William stood and watched the proceeding. His delight was tempered with apprehension. The collie had now made his way into a second field in search of recruits, while his main army waited meekly for him in the road. William hastily decided to disassociate himself from the proceedings entirely. Better to let one of his dogs go than risk losing both. He hurried on to the dancing class. Near the front door, he tied the collie to a tree with the lead and entered a room where a lot of little boys were brushing their hair and changing their shoes. At last, a tinkly little bell rang, and they made their way to a large room where the dancing class was held. From an opposite door was issuing a bevy of little girls dressed in fairy-like frills with white socks and dancing shoes. There followed them an attendant army of mothers and nurses who had been divesting them of stockings and shoes and outdoor garments. William greeted as many of these fairy-like beings as would condescend to look at him with his most hideous grimace. The one he disliked most of all, a haughty beauty with auburn curls, was given him as a partner. "Oh, need I have William?" she pleaded pitifully. "He's so awful."
"I'm not," said William indignantly. "I'm no more awful than her."
"Have him for a few minutes, dear," said Mrs. Beecham, who was tall and majestic and almost incredibly sinuous, "and then I'll let you have someone else." The dancing class proceeded on its normal course. William glanced at the clock and sighed. Only 5 minutes gone. A whole hour of it. And on his birthday. His birthday! Even the thought of his two new dogs didn't quite wipe out that grievance.
"Please may I stop having William now? He's doing the steps all wrong."
William defended himself with spirit.
"I'm doing 'em right. It's her what's doing 'em wrong."
Mrs. Beecham stopped them and gave William another partner, a little girl with untidy hair and a roguish smile. She was a partner more to William's liking, and the dance developed into a competition as to who could tread more often on the other's feet. It was, of course, a pastime unworthy of a famous Indian chief, but it was better than dancing. William unbent to her.
"It's my birthday today, and I've had two dogs give me."
"Ooh, lucky."
"And I've got one already, so that makes three. Three dogs I've got."
"Ooh, I say, have you got 'em here?"
"I only brought one. It's in the garden, tied to a tree near the door."
They edged to the window, and the little girl glanced out with interest. Then she halted, suddenly paralysed with horror, her mouth and eyes wide open. Almost immediately her vocal powers returned to her, and she uttered a scream.
"Look!" she said. "Oh, look!"
They crowded to the window, little girls, little boys, nurses and mothers. The collie had escaped from his lead and found his way into the little girl's dressing room. There he'd collected the stockings, shoes and navy blue knickers that lay about and brought them all out onto the lawn, where he was happily engaged in worrying them. Remnants lay everywhere about him. He was tossing up into the air one leg of a pair of knickers. Around him the air was thick with wool and fluff. He was having the time of his life. After a moment's frozen horror, the whole dancing class, little girls, little boys, nurses, mothers, and dancing mistress, surged out onto the lawn. The collie saw them coming and leapt up playfully, half a knicker hanging out of one corner of his mouth and a stocking out of the other. They bore down upon him in a crowd. He wagged his tail in delight. All these people coming to play with him. He entered into the spirit of the game at once and leapt off to the shrubbery, followed by all these jolly people. A glorious game, the best fun he'd had for weeks. Meanwhile, William was making his way quietly homeward. They'd say it was all his fault, of course, but he'd learnt by experience that it was best to get as quickly as possible away from the scene of a crime. Delayed retribution never had the inspired frenzy of retribution exacted on the spot. He turned the bend in the road that brought his own house in sight, and there he stood as if suddenly turned to stone. He'd forgotten the other dog. The front garden was a sea of sheep. They covered the drive, grass and flower beds. They even stood on the steps that led to the front door. The overflow filled the road outside. Behind them was the other collie pup, running to and fro, crowding them up still more closely, pursuing truants and bringing them back to the fold. Having collected the sheep, his instinct had told him to bring them to his master. His master was, of course, the man who had brought him from the shop, not the boy who'd taken him for a walk. His master was in this house. He had brought the sheep to his master. His master was, in fact, with Ethel in the drawing-room. Mrs. Brown was out and was not expected back till tea-time. Mr. Dewar considered he was getting on very well with Ethel. He'd not yet told her about the two collies he'd brought for her. She'd said last week that she adored collies, and he decided to bring her a couple of them next week. He meant to introduce the subject quite carelessly when he'd reached the right stage of intimacy. And so, when she told him that he seemed to understand her better than any other man she'd ever met, as she said this to all her admirers, he said to her, quite casually,
"Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention it, but I just brought a little present, or rather, presents for you this afternoon. They're in the drive."
Ethel's face lit up with pleasure and interest.
"Oh, how perfectly sweet of you," she said.
Have a look at them and see if you like them."
She walked over to the window. He remained in his armchair, watching the back of her Botticelli neck, lounging at his ease, the gracious, generous, all-providing male. She looked out. Sheep. Hundreds and thousands of sheep filled the drive, the lawn, the steps, the road outside.
"Well," said Mr. Dewar casually, "do you like them?"
She raised a hand to her head.
What are they for?" she said faintly.
"Pets," said Mr. Dewar.
"Pets?" she screamed. I've nowhere to keep them. I've nothing to feed them on."
"Oh, they only want a few dog biscuits," said Mr. Dewar.
"Dog biscuits?"
Ethel stared at them wildly for another second, then collapsed onto the nearest chair. Mrs. Brown had returned home. She'd had literally to fight her way to her front door through a tightly packed mass of sheep. Mr. Dewar was wildly apologetic. He couldn't think what had happened. The other dog arrived at the same moment as a crowd of indignant farmers demanding their sheep. It still had a knicker hanging out of one corner of its mouth and a stocking out of the other. William was nowhere to be seen. William came home about half an hour later. There were no signs of Mr. Dewar, or the dogs, or the sheep. Ethel and Mrs. Brown were in the drawing-room.
"I shall never speak to him again," Ethel was saying. "I don't care whether it was his fault or not. I shall always connect him with that horrible moment when I looked out and saw nothing but sheep as far as you can see. I've told him never to come to the house again."
"I don't think he'll dare to when your father sees the state the grass is in. It looks like a ploughed field."
"As if I want hundreds of sheep like that," said Ethel, confusing what Mr. Dewar had meant to do with what he had actually done. "Oh, pets, indeed."
"And Mrs. Beecham's just rung up about the other dog," went on Mrs. Brown. "It evidently followed William to the dancing class and tore up some stockings and things there. I don't see how she can blame us for that. She was really very rude about it. I don't think I shall let William go to any more of her dancing classes." William sat listening with an expressionless face, but his heart was singing within him.
"No more dancing classes. That man never coming to the house any more. A glorious birthday, except for one thing, of course."
But just then, the housemaid came into the room.
"Oh, please, ma'am, it's the man from the vet with Master William's dog. He says he's quite all right now."
William leapt from the room, and he and Jumble fell upon each other ecstatically in the hall. The minute he saw Jumble, William knew that he could never have endured to have any other dog.
"I'll take him for a little walk," he said. "I bet he wants one."
The joy of walking along the road again with his beloved Jumble at his heels was almost too great to be endured. He sauntered along, Jumble leaping up at him in tempestuous affection. His heart was full of creamy content. He'd got Jumble back. That man was never coming to the house any more. He wasn't going to any more dancing classes. It was the nicest birthday he'd ever had in his life.